I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program has been brought to you by Artisanal Imports. Artisanal Imports is an importer of specialty beers from England, Germany, Belgium, and beyond. For more information, visit www.artisanalimports.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome back to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi, and we are a podcast on all things fermentable, including all sorts of fun stuff. Today, Mary and I are pretty much fresh back from the Craft Brewers Conference, where we saw lots of inspirational brewing stuff, including a great presentation from today's guest, Bruce Williams. What's up, Bruce?
I'm good, thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Dane.
And we're talking about brewing with botanicals, but before that, Mary got an interview a while ago with Professor Fritz Bream.
Yep, so back in December, I spoke to Dr. Fritz Bream in the backyard of the Diamond in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, or Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and he spoke to me about his 1809 and his Grazer beer, which we played at an earlier episode, I think episode 4, and I also got a short clip talking about how he makes his gruit. So we're going to start off with that, and then we'll bring in Bruce. All right, so I am back in the backyard of the Diamond in Greenpoint neighborhood of Brooklyn, speaking with Dr. Fritz Bream, and we're gonna talk about today about his gruit. So tell me, what inspired you to recreate a gruit? That's a very unusual. So gruit, what is a gruit? So a gruit was before beer, before we knew that hops were.
Yeah, that's the point. Before hops.
Yeah, so people would use, instead of balancing the beer with hops and using all the qualities that hop give, preservation, yeah, aroma, flavor, bittering, etc., people would use spices and herbs.
Right.
And that was called a gruit. So what inspired you to create a gruit?
Very simple, you know, because coming from a hop family,
yes.
You know, so I grew up in a hop area. I was thinking, are there any other options? Well, let's say that way, I was hoping there are no other options, you know, in the sake of my area, you know, where I grew up. So no, but seriously, it's just, I just wanted to know how does it turn out, mm-hmm, if you're using no hops? How does it turn out from the microbiological aspect, you know? Because, you know, like you said already, it's hops are a preservative.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, you know, the gruit is very interesting because basically it's not only for the flavor, but originally the spices and herbs had more or less how can I say that? I don't want to call it religious background, but it had also the background...
Symbolic,
and it was something like it could open your mind. You know what I mean?
So yes.
I don't want to call it like a drug or something like that, but you can, some herbs can make you more creative,
mm-hmm,
take away limitations, you know, and so some people try to find the spirit of, I don't want to call it God, but or the spirit from somewhere,
right?
and by using more herbs or natural ingredients, you know,
mm-hmm,
and that can be very dangerous.
Yes.
So the idea is, can you use other herbs or ingredients which give an interesting flavor without being dangerous,
mm-hmm,
but stabilizing the beer in a way that at least you can keep it for a while, you,
mm-hmm,
know, not at too high alcohol. And that's the challenge, you know, because if you go up to 10-11% alcohol, well, it's relatively easy.
Right.
But the gruit is only about 5%. So it's quite quite risky still. So, and then the question is, how do you compose your gruit? Because there are no rules for that.
Right.
So you can basically choose whatever you like to choose. And, well, it's just a kind of personal preference then, on the one hand, flavor-wise. But technically, you have to think a little bit about what could really, well, bring a benefit to the stability of the beer from the microbiological side, but also from the protein side, you know, because, you know, hops usually don't only bring alpha acid in flavor, they also bring polyphenols, you know, and most of the brewers know that, you know, if you boil the hops, or the wort with the hops, you get a better hot break. So you take out more proteins. So you have to go for something which also brings phenolic substances into the system so that you get a cross reaction with the proteins. So, and all this, you know, this different parts were, you know, really were important factors to decide what you put into the gruit.
The spice and herb component.
And then with my work in Asia, of course, you get some inspiration from Asia, you know.
Absolutely.
And if you may, I hope you really can confirm that there are some Asian spices in the gruit.
In the gruit. You know?
And I think it's a good fit. You know, and it's a combination of traditional European spices, but also some Asian spices. You know, and most of the spices anyway, even during that time, came from Asia.
Right. So yeah, along the spice route.
So it's nothing new, basically.
Right.
And that was the main reason for the gruit.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very fun. Very fun stuff. Pete Dixon from Six Point just came into their recent Mad Scientist was a gruit. Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Thanks for making it.
Welcome.
But Bruce, that the talk you gave down at CBC was really, really, really inspiring as a brewer for many reasons. You know, in particular, you showed a lot of your personal foraging of the spices that you use and some of the stuff that you do with Williams Brothers. You made a heather ale. You brought it with us.
Yep, we tried. I mean, all of our products are foraged locally. That's the whole philosophy of what we do, is to try and utilize local ingredients to make historic ales. And these are precedents of our country. They are local, regional flavours that we are trying to include. And unfortunately, I've not tried an awful lot of the other gruits that are around in the US. I'm trying to get my way through them. I tried a fantastic one from the brewery in Orange County. It's a lavender saison, which I thought, fantastic. I mean, that's, to me, tastes better than... I think that could include a lot more people that don't already drink beer because of the flavour profile.
Right.
And it's a genuine product, and it's locally harvested and all the rest of it, which I think is fantastic. And I mean, I did go to an extreme in that presentation about, you know, presenting that concept of brewing a beer from a 7-mile island as well, and utilising the ingredients from a terroir, you know, that whole concept of locally foraging a product to make a beer that was made in Scotland for 4,000 years, you know. And this little island is between the island of Islay and Jura, which are both famous for whiskey.
Yeah.
But this island can't make whiskey, but it can make, you can produce enough product to make a local beer or ale.
And is that where you get the seaweed as well from the shores?
We picked the seaweed from the shores of that particular island. We picked the heather from there, the bog myrtle. We actually brought oats back. Oh, we didn't brew it on the island. We took all the ingredients from the island and brewed it in Islay in the brewery. But it just goes to show that you can utilize these ingredients and make this fantastic product from just this local area. And it did, you know, like we'd make heather ale as a normal product, but that batch of heather ale that I made from Gia was in fact had a lot more flavor to it. I mean, it's a low island, it goes up about more than about 60 or 70 feet, so it's got a lot of salt water air going over the top of it, and that really came through in the beer as well, you know, that kind of a briny quality that you get from being on a low-lying island in the Atlantic, you know.
Yeah. Are there any typical rules that you would apply to brewing with botanicals?
Yeah, well, I have a basic philosophy or a principle of making beers with botanicals. I mean, foraging for local botanicals is how I started. So using local ingredients and then coming in and making up a small batch. So normally what I do is make up a single batch fermentation, probably of just a gallon, the high proportion of botanicals in it, but with a single botanical, not mixing it all up. And then after you've got that, then you can mix those together. Now, for example, your sort of qualities of stability come into play here. Now, we use a thing called bog myrtle regularly in our brewing, and that has those phenol qualities.
Bog what?
Bog myrtle.
Bog myrtle.
Yeah. Myrica gale is its official Latin name, I think, right? Mm-hmm. It grows all over Scotland as well. And that gives you all those qualities. It does give you stability. It gives you an antiseptic level that you need to get. So that gives that product stability. We have to kick... So, again, I brew just a pure bog myrtle beer as well, and then blend those together.
Right.
Because it... In order to maintain the heather note, you don't want to totally overcome it with the bog myrtle note, so you have to balance that flavour. Same scenario when we were doing a Scots pine, a beer called Alba, which is made with pine and spruce.
Mm-hmm.
Now we pick fresh pine shoots, and they again have high antiseptic qualities as well, so they go into the boil, but you have to boil them for at least 90 minutes to get
those qualities out of it?
And also to kick out the resin. You have to really boil it for a long time because it does pick up the protein as well, and it does help the break. But then we use the spruce tips. Now, you can't boil the spruce tips because I don't know if you've ever used spruce as an essence, but it just turns molassesy and brown, and it doesn't have the aromatic qualities or flavours as using fresh spruce. So in April, when the spruce trees start to bud, they just burst a little brown bud on the end of it, and they just burst and it goes emerald green. You'll see it. In April, you watch the spruce just goes bright green. Right? Mm. And just at that point is when you pick the spruce tips and then use those like as a late hop. But you don't add them to the boil, because if you add them to the boil, all the volatiles just get flashed off and you don't have the quality of the aromas and flavours that you could get.
Do you do it at flame out, or like what degree?
We take it down to about 90 degrees because we've got a whirlpool kettle, so we just run it down to about 90 and then we put in the spruce tips. Yeah. And that's the best way to do it. I've done it before with putting it in too early, and it just that you lose so much of the aroma from the product. But you've tried these beers.
I have. I mean, you have them.
And people are saying to me, they're going like, "What?" And it was a kind of a like blindfold test on that beer. It's quite regularly. I like to do that with people and say, "What do you think this beer is made from?" And we get black cherries or bubble gum and all these kind of notes that they're picking up. And of course, it's just spruce and pine,
right? Does it change, how much does spruce and pine vary, yield to yield?
It does vary a bit, but then we're compensating now. We've got to a point where when we pick it, we freeze it straight away because we can't use it all, straight away.
Right.
We do have a certain seasonality to our products, and we're particularly bringing the spruce and pine beer. Ironically, we do spruce and pine beer mostly at Christmas time because people seem to like it at that time of year. And the time that we harvest it is in April. It does vary from year to year, but now we're mixing it in.
Yeah.
So we're mixing in 2010 with 2011, trying to get some sort of continuity to the flavour. And also, we do kind of rule of thumb taste it as well and say, right, okay, we need to add a little bit more spruce or cut back on the pine a little bit because this seems to be a lot stronger than it was last year.
I was talking just before we started that, your talk was pretty inspirational. And one of the first things Mary and I did when we came back is look through what kind of local things we have here, and there's actually a group that gets together and forages in Central Park and Prospect Park
other New York City and Westchester parks.
Yeah, but the Parks Commission is actually going against them, or like they need to be there,
trying
to cut that down. But I'm not sure what side of the fence I lie on that.
I
brew such small batches that I'm not really.
I don't know. Ecology is going
to... But I'd love to make a Central Park gruit, man. Yeah. That'd be really fun. Or a Prospect Park gruit.
Yeah, you could. Yeah.
But I think you can also... We were talking about getting stuff from the green market, because speaking of lavender, there's a wonderful person that a farm on Long Island that brings lavender to the green market. So even if you're in a city like we are and you can't forage in your backyard or your local woods, you can still go to your green market at least and get some local... stuff. And I think there's actually people that you could probably make some special requests from your green market as well if you're a home brewer or brewing on a small system. in lieu of going to the sea and foraging seaweed like Bruce did.
It's not that far, though. I mean, from here, for example, it's not that far to go.
No, that's true.
Yeah. I don't know how happy I'd be about using seaweed.
Get some Coney Island seaweed.
You have to go way out. Yeah.
With that, we're going to take a quick break. Thanks for listening to Men About It. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Pete Dixon from Six Point and taste some of the beers we have in front of us and talk about the approach to both of them.
Yep.
Artisanal Imports is an importer of specialty beers from England, Germany, Belgium, and beyond. Their portfolio of fine ales and lagers is broad and represents a wide range of beer styles, but it is not their mission to collect every small brewery across Europe. They believe in working in full partnership with their breweries and are careful to select beers that are high quality and interesting, but that do not overlap one to the next. For more information, visit www.artisanalimports.com.
I've been doing lots of different events.
Welcome back to Fun Men About It. We're in second session of this Fun Men About It thing we got going on. Pete Dixon, how's it going?
It's going good.
What is the Mad Scientist series you guys are doing over there?
We're doing a series that's coming out once every month with a new beer that we kind of try to cut our teeth on, a whole new style or approach, either it be historic or just something crazy and off the wall. The last couple lineups have been pretty historic. We're about to tackle a traditional Politz Grätzer.
Nice.
And that should be coming out, I think, within the month. And the latest that we have, which I actually brought with me today, is the Mad 13, which is going to be the Gruet Ale.
And what strength is the Gruet Ale?
Ours actually rang in a little high for what we were approaching. I don't actually remember the number right now. Between 5 and 6.
Okay, well, that's some moderate. What botanicals did you use for this gruet? Did you forage Central Park or Boston Park?
We did not forage Central
Park. Or Red Hook Beaches?
We did a little bit of what Bruce was talking about, where we actually took the time to single out about 5 or 6 different seasonings that we wanted to use, including what we use, which is juniper and mugwort, heather tips, and yarrow. And we actually made up small 5-gallon batches of each and then did a little blending and saw where we wanted to go. Some of the guys that got knocked out of the running was, there was some...
I can't licorice root. Point.
There we go.
Oh, licorice root.
Sorry. so many seasons. So we went through that. We ended up brewing a final batch of the 4 all together. We also tried to play around a little bit with the malt bill. We wanted to really try to explore kind of what it would have been historically. So although we can't recreate what they did back then with, you know, you're at the whim of whatever you can grow in your field. So, I mean, modern farming technology now singles out barley and only barley. So back then it was like, all right, maybe there's sprinkling of oat, a little sprinkling of wheat, a little sprinkling of rye, and we just kind of like threw a little bit out in there with the barley. And then as far as roasting goes, we threw in a little bit of smoke because couldn't keep it all out, and sure, we threw in a little bit of some roasted malts. No caramel because obviously, you know, not really to the style, but so that's what we ended up with.
That's exciting. And I'm really excited to taste it. But my glass is full of something else at the moment, which is actually from Bruce. What is this?
This is your beer with Brian Strumke.
Yeah. Brian came over. Brian and I have been friends for a while. We have an understanding, shall we say. Right, so ended up...
Thanks to the other people.
So he came over and has always been intrigued about making a saison as well for me, because like this is a new style for me. We've never used the saison yeast in our brewery, and he said like he'd like to use a lot of our botanicals and mix in his yeast to it. So he shipped himself over with a bag full of his yeast, and we'd already chatted about the concept about using a blend of heather, myrtle, and we use seaweed in the mash in that one as well. You've got that little briny, salty. Yeah. Note on it, yeah. And then, of course, with his saison yeast. But also, you know, he's quite generous with his use of hops. So he's quite a lot of Nelson Savon in it as well, in a late end. And we put gooseberries in it as well. So it's secondary fermented on gooseberries as well. So it's got that acidity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is delicious. So are we going to see this in this country?
Yep. Well, eventually, when I get the label designed from Mr. Strunky,
we'll push him to that.
Yeah. And then we're going to bottle it in 33s. I'm probably going to send it over in the key kegs as well. So it'll be available on draft. But I think Brian's particularly wants to introduce it in a 33cl bottle.
Sure. Yeah. So Williams Brothers does not make saisons.
We've never done a saison before. Yeah. This is the first time. I mean, and that's the influence of Brian. That's what I love about all this thing, that this kind of friends across the water, the way that we develop ideas and concepts, you know, that he's come over and influenced our brewery, and also obviously we've originally given him the idea to use botanicals in his brewing as well. So it makes it just, you know, it's great when that kind of stuff happens, you know.
Yeah, this is delicious.
It is good.
So this is a bottle that Bruce handed me actually after the after he finished his seminar at the Craft Brewers Conference. He pulls this bottle out. It's a brown plastic bottle, and he's like, "Don't put this in the fridge yet. It's still bottle conditioning."
Yeah.
But I thought it would be great to open it on the show, and it's absolutely beautiful beer.
Yeah. So this is not available yet, but we're way ahead. But no, I'm dead keen to try this one as well. So this is your number 13.
Let's try this gruit. Have you brewed much with botanicals as a home brewer or prior to this gruit, Pete?
Not much, actually. I ended up really just kind of diving in on this project in particular. As far as my homebrewing career goes, all 4 years of it, it was... Oh, careful.
It's lively.
Stuck mostly to the hops and, you know, the traditional brewing ingredients.
So you've put hops in this one as well, then?
We actually ended up using just a smidge of Hallertau, just because we liked the way that it balanced out. And we justified it in our own heads, saying that, well, there was hops around, too. And occasionally, it would have probably made it into someone's kettle. Yeah. So,
well, what sort of IBU level is it?
9. I mean, it's nothing.
Significant. Yeah.
But it was just enough of a hoppy backbone and the bitterness just to add to the 4 flavors, and like without it, it was definitely noticeably not there.
Well, we have to list in our ingredient panel that we have hops in most of our beers in order to get through the FDA qualification of what beer is if it doesn't have hops in it.
Really?
Yeah, we're putting literally a pound of hops into 40 barrels in order just to keep the FDA approved that it does contain a hop level.
0.02 BIB. Yeah.
I have mine to make a kvass next week at 508, and I think I have to throw a little bit of barley in there too just to keep it
in the FDA.
Yeah.
But are you selling it?
Yeah, we're selling it down at 508. Right. It's a small little gastrobrewery in South Manhattan. Right, you know. Okay. 2-barrel system. I yield 50 gallons at a time.
And
so
does that actually the FDA get involved in something as small as that?
They don't come after us, but if we're going to do it right, yeah. And we always play by the rules.
Even if you just put one hot lead, you've done it.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about, because one thing also that I was interested in your seminar is that you spoke about, you know, being careful about what you're using as far as botanicals. So you can't use everything. I mean, plants can be toxic. Yeah. Certainly. So that's something as a home brewer or as a pro brewer that you want to be aware of. You can't just, you know, we're talking about foraging or using what's in your garden. You can't just use everything. You have to make sure that it's safe.
It is a very big concern. I mean, you've got to take responsibility as a brewer that when you're offering somebody a drink that you've got to take that on board, right?
Right.
And heather, in fact, does have a possible psychotropic quality. So from that point of view, if it's dried, it won't have... but if you were to use it fresh and possibly not boil it and not go through the fermentation process fully, then you could actually have a residual. But we're boiling it for 90 minutes and it's being fermented, and then we're running it through a filtration process as well. So all of those things are eliminated in it. We do make a batch at Christmas time every year called the Pictish Brew, which people queue up for, and it's kind of become a kind of an urban legend that you get stoned on it.
And what is in that?
Just heather.
Just heather.
Yeah, just heather.
We just don't wash it very much.
Pretty funny. I like that.
Man, this is really good too. This is the first time I've had this. So.
Thank you.
For between 5% and 6%, it's very nice.
Well, that's good. Yeah. And your licorice root, did you say?
No, we actually canceled that out. That was one of the ones that were in there originally. We had
yarrow. Name the four you had in there again.
Yarrow, mugwort, juniper, and heather tips.
And heather tips.
So the astringency of the heather tips is coming through. I can feel that. Yeah. The dryness. And did you buy the dried heather for that one?
Yeah, it was dried.
I think fresh heather does grow in New England, though. You can get it in New Hampshire.
Because Cambridge, one of the beers that was poured at
CBC,
your seminar was the Cambridge Heather Ale. And I think I read about that. Will talked about that,
He legally got it and foraged for it, which is that. I suppose that it's bizarre and ironic in a way. I mean, I'm bringing a product 4,000 miles, but I'm bringing a philosophy as well. You know, it's like the whole concept of saying, right, okay, this is the style of beer that's made 4,000 miles away in a local terroir or whatever, but think about it and try and utilize that philosophy with where you are.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's the great thing about it. We can spread that concept and, you know, in the West Coast of America, they could make West Coast spruce tip beer. It'd be great, you know.
And I think that's one of the things that I noticed at the Craft Brewers Conference is that a lot of brewers are using interesting local ingredients. I had a Rosemary Gosa from North Carolina. We had a spruce and sarsaparilla beer from Minnesota. And then Perennial in St. Louis is doing a black walnut beer that was made with local black walnuts. So that's one thing I kept noticing over and over is that, A, very unusual ingredients. I mean, to traditional beer drinkers, and they're also using local ingredients.
Yeah.
So I think, you know,
it was good. I mean,
you're ahead of the curve.
even there, when you was at that presentation, I did say at one point, put your hand up if you've used botanicals in brewing. Almost the whole room.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. There was 800 people there. There was couldn't see a place where there wasn't a hand in the air. So they're already using it, and they're starting to consider the use of it. But just that kind of idea of using local ingredients as well. There's so many possibilities over here in the US to start using those things, you know, because it doesn't, North America in particular, doesn't have a great historical precedent for alcoholic beverage, but it does have a lot of great ingredients.
And we're inspired by everyone, so.
Yeah. And you use them all different ways. Where did you put the botanicals in this?
We actually ended up doing 15 minutes before the end of boil.
Okay.
So, Nestor, it was interesting hearing you talk about spruce before, Bruce, because we did, one of the earlier mad scientists was a spruce tip ale.
Right.
And there, I'm actually interested now to try your 90 degree trick. We did flame out and whirlpool and then went, and got a very nice juicy fruit aroma and characteristic to it, but... I'm curious to see now with the 90 degree.
You know, they're very volatile, these particular oils, so they'll just flash off, you know. You've got to try and be very gentle with them. Also, at the same time, you want to make sure that the product is sterile and stable, so you have to watch not to get it too cold. Yeah. But, definitely, and it's that's only experience that taught you that, but also use fresh ingredients. Don't use spruce extracts or anything like that. It's much better to, if you can, and it's not a big deal. You go out and pick these things in April and put them in the freezer and break them whenever you want.
I have some field trips planned for this year.
Central Park.
Central, yeah, exactly.
You should get out a bit further than Central.
Coney Island, Coney Island beaches, you know. Fantastic. That's very fun. Any new things coming up? Oh, with the Grotzer, going back to the feds, better throw a handful of barley in that Grotzer.
All right. We'll do.
We have a friend that actually put a Grotzer together and told him the recipe was 100% smoked wheat, and that didn't fly.
Really?
So
it has to have barley to be considered a beer.
And he asked how much, and she's like, some. So just throw some in there.
Just a handful.
any new ingredients that you're excited to work with? Do you have any new beers that you could deal with from Scotland?
Yeah, I mean, we're always developing concepts. I mean, like the elderberry beer, which we made before, the Ebulum, I don't know if you've had that one before. It's a roasted oat and elderberry beer. It's kind of got a winey quality. Like it's a stout black beer, but it's got this kind of port essence coming through in it. And I'm starting to look at the idea of wood aging some of these things. So I want to get hold of some port barrels and then match that up and put them in, you know, nice port barrels and leave them for a year. because we do a seasonal release, which is our anniversary beers, and we use whiskey casks. So we've been using particular collaborations with different whiskey companies, like Auchentoshan was the latest one, and then we did a Glengarry. We've done Glenmorangie. Just trying to basically find source different casks to age our beer in, and obviously with the Scottish tin on it, you know. Yeah. So it's going to be a Scotch barrel. But yeah, those are the kind of things that I'm looking at now. And I don't know, caramel. There's a thing called caramel, which is the root of the bitter vetch. But unfortunately, it's hard to get. It's a tiny little tuber, and to get enough of it to brew a batch of beer, and it's going to be tricky. So I'm probably going to have to build myself a polytunnel and grow the rhizome myself in order to get it.
Real quick, too, before we get out of here, because we got very limited time left. You recently bottled your Frauk in a resealable bottle, cap. That's kind of new, right? Yeah.
We're using a thing called a Zork.
I had only seen it like maybe 2 weeks ago.
It's an Australian idea. It's an idea of reusable champagne cap. It's quite good because you tear it off the first time. It's got a security seal on it, but you can re-pop it back on again. And of course, it's in a 750cl bottle, and the homebrewers love it because they can reuse it as well. It's quite a nice... That's a wood-aged beer. That was wood-aged in the Auchentoshan sherry casks.
I think that's why it came to mind. But... guys, thank you so much for joining us.
So, Bruce Williams of Williams Brothers Brewing Company. And then Pete Dixon from Six Point. So, you guys can get all of their beers right now. The Gruit's going to be around for a limited time in New York City. And
how big are the batches of the Mad Scientist batches?
How
much did you brew at a time?
We brew 14 barrels. About 50 liters.
Mm-hmm. So, it's just on draft then?
Yeah.
Not going to package it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Google that, and then Bruce's beer we get.
We've got some cask conditioned beer around us now. We have shipped over some 30-liter heather ales.
Oh, and great!
Key kegs as well, so you should start seeing that on rotation in bars. Yeah.
And then bottles, you always.
Well, we have bottles all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'd urge you to try those and be inspired by them, and try brewing with botanicals.
Brew with local ingredients, botanicals. Yeah. To stop, let us know how it is.
Thanks Send for listening. Next week we're going to have Fritz for now on. A local homebrewer, and we're going to play some of our footage from Craft Brewers Conference. We got some great interviews. I think Matt Brindelson from Firestone Walker and Jim Crooks, who is the new the master blender from Firestone Walker's Barrel Works. We're going to play interviews with them, and then we're going to talk about hops and all kinds of stuff next week. So please tune in 7 p.m. next Monday.
HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening.
For men about it.
For men about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.